It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. More about 1803 and why Microsoft doesn't seem to want to admit there's a problem. Redstone 5, Windows Server 2019, both in pre-release. And no, Office 365 is not being completely rewritten in JavaScript. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 575, recorded Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. Codcake. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Moogsoft. Reduce IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. Visit Moogsoft.com to learn more and sign up for a demo. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about the latest news from Microsoft with the two top journos. I'm going to use, from now on, I use journo slang. It's time for espresso with the journos. Here's your lead, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com, ZDNet.com, and all around leak generator.
You're a leak stress.
But that sounds like she leaks. She doesn't leak. She's the person to whom you leak.
It's like a leak recipient.
Exactly.
I definitely don't want to say leak receptacle. So let's just leave this all out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Also here, Paul Thurrott. He's at Thurrott.com. That's his blog. If you have any tech support questions,
yes, please.
At all, please email him. You won't believe what happens next.
Even if it's not with my site, if you're having problems with ZDNet, I can help there.
I get them all. The big thing people do to me is they, you know, when they're complaining to a company, they CC me.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Did you get that?
Me too. Yep. We get CC'd on Satya Nadella mails a lot.
Like, see Satya, I'm telling somebody else.
Yep.
How can I learn more from these guys than I do from you?
Satya sent an email to the staff, and I am going to address this so you guys don't have to. But, of course, as everybody is aware, unless you watch Fox News, there's a bit of a trouble on the border, on the southern border of the United States. And Satya Nadella, who is an immigrant, addressed it. Now, he partly addressed it, I think, because there's also some heat on him. Because Microsoft was doing some work for ICE, the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement Division of the Department of Homeland Security. And he's also got a letter from 100 employees saying we shouldn't be doing this. But he did say that, I'll tell you what, let me just read what he said. He said, "Team," this is an email I sent to everybody, "like many of you, I'm appalled at the abhorrent policy of separating immigrant children from their families at the southern border of the U.S. As both a parent and an immigrant, this issue touches me personally." He goes on to talk about his own, you know, experience. And he says, "Microsoft has long taken a history of principled approach of how we live up to our mission of empowering every person and every organization. Any engagement with the government has been and will be guided by our ethics and principles. We will continue to have this dialogue both within our company and with our stakeholders outside." He says, "I want to be clear, Microsoft's not working with the U.S. government on any projects related to separating children from their families at the border. I would hope not. Our current cloud engagement with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, is supporting legacy mail, calendar messaging, and document management workloads." The kind of thing they do probably for every corporate enterprise that uses Microsoft products. He goes on to say, "The immigration policy of this country is one of our greatest competitive advantages. It's something we must preserve and promote. America as a nation of immigrants." That means standing with every immigrant who works at Microsoft and standing for change in the inhumane treatment of children at the U.S. border today. He was joined by a lot of tech CEOs who wrote similar words and letters. But I know that this is not a show about politics. It's about Microsoft. It's about tech. But I didn't want to lay this on you guys, so I'll take the heat from all the crazy people.
But the email address is Paul.
I thought we should mention it because it is an issue, and it's going to be. I don't think the issue is going to go away at Microsoft because there continues to be a lot of Microsoft employees who are unhappy with this. Is this a new thing? Because Google got some heat too. Remember, for its defense contract, a number of employees quit, and many more signed petitions saying Google should stop this work, which they did, I believe.
I think it's kind of new.
It seems to be there's a little more activism in the ranks.
Yeah.
You probably have to go back to the 1960s to find companies that were controversially involved with the U.S. government and or military.
Oh, yeah. I remember protesting against DuPont's presence on the campus, things like that. You're right. That was certainly a feature of the 60s anti-war protests.
Yep.
Okay. Moving on.
But I think the only thing I would say on all this is, in some ways, Microsoft is kind of bringing this on themselves because they were positioning themselves as the steward of morality around AI. And then it came out that ethics. Yeah, it was all about ethics. And then suddenly it's like, oh, wait, you're selling face recognition technology to ICE.
Oh, you know? Is that what they were selling? No, that was Amazon.
I thought there was also a Microsoft blog post talking about
it.
I thought so. Maybe
and then
wrong,
they covered up their tracks a little bit because it was on LinkedIn and they deleted it. And that, of course, is a...
They said one employee deleted it and then they put it back.
Okay. And somebody was saying
that's more controversial.
This happened during the apartheid in South Africa, and Microsoft did, in fact, withdraw from South Africa during the kind of global boycott.
Yeah, and you know what the employees are asking them to do is stop working with ICE completely. And if you notice in Nadella's letter, he's not committing to do that.
You know what? All of these companies do business with China, which has a rich history of human rights abuses, and you know people are dying regularly at these factories that are making the Xboxes and iPhones and whatever else that we all use and love, and they're not going to do anything about any of that. If anything, they're trying to get more, you know, firmly in that country. So I don't mean to say that this is all hypocrisy. But it's maybe not surprising that there are Microsoft employees or Google employees or whatever that are upset about what's happening with this particular issue and petitioning the company. But I mean, ultimately, I if you're worried that someone's going to do something bad with a software or service that you sell, then you can't sell it because once it leaves, and is in the hands of others, they will do whatever they want. So you have to decide whether or not you're doing business with whatever regime in whatever country.
Yeah.
And it's actually always going to be a challenge because these companies, Apple's getting a lot of heat for its outreach to China. These companies, this is kind of the nature of. I don't know
this is
how
keep
a company.
Happening,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know exactly what a company does.
Yeah, I don't either at this point. I feel like people like our age are more jaded about this. It's like, it's a company. They're not, going to do the moral thing. They're going to do the expedient thing, right?
Well, but Microsoft puts it on themselves. Like somebody said earlier, they're presenting themselves as the ethical company now, which is ludicrous given their history. But I guess in the context of the current leadership of the company, I mean, they're morally or whatever, they seem to have an upper hand over certain other companies. But you're still a corporation. I mean, you're still in business to make money.
Every once in a while, I get an email. I got one the other day saying, Leo, you just don't understand when you say, because I say it all the time, the companies are optimized for profit. And that's kind of what their responsibility to their stakeholders is.
Sure.
And so you can't be surprised, at least, when a company acts to optimize profit. You can ask them, like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Apple, et cetera, to behave ethically. But that's not necessarily what they're optimizing for.
Right.
And,
but they market it, and Apple does this very heavily. Microsoft's doing it.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you guys saw this. I think Mark Benioff is it Mark Benioff? No, who's the guy that runs Salesforce?
Mark Benioff. Yeah,
Benioff.
Bernie-off is actually a better way of.
But there was an interview with him in the New York Times where he was talking about his direction for that company, and there's a whole ethical bent to it that I think is kind of interesting. And you know, he has this theory that you can run a company in an ethical way, and that you can be a force for good, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think he's a force for insanity, from what I could tell. But it was an interesting interview, I don't know. This is what you have to. Unfortunately, with what's going on in the world today, you have to kind of look at it from a perspective of, well, maybe something good will come out of this, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe by addressing these issues now, whether it's politically out in the world or just in our own little industry, you know, things can improve.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Moving on. The controversy of the week.
The other controversy of the week.
The other controversy.
Let's get back into a more comfortable area of controversy.
go ahead. I took the lead on the last one. This is all you, baby.
Okay. So, you know, the past several shows, we've been talking about problems with the April 2018 update to Windows 10, also known as 1803. We knew Microsoft at some point was going to say it was ready for business, but it happened last week, which was faster than normal. And what was more surprising and confusing was they said this was like their best rollout ever. Fewest problems. People were the happiest. Everything was going great. And I'm like, wow, where are we talking about the same update? Because no.
I have,
so they threw out a bunch of stats that they have from their telemetry data. 20% reduction in system stability issues. We're fixing things that are broken faster. This is better. That's better. And I wrote it straight, and I just put in my post at the end, that's not what the anecdotal evidence is saying.
Yeah, I wrote it a little more forcefully, but I sort of said the same thing. I mean, you know, here's what they're saying, which is, by the way, very interesting. They actually gave some numbers, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, it's on 250 million devices now.
Yeah.
As of last week, right?
Also, Windows 10 active monthly devices has still not surpassed 700 million, which is kind of strange. I believe that Terry Myerson first threw out the phrase that was something like, we're almost at 700 million in late March, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If not, it was certainly April, but I think it was late March. That's a little weird. But the other thing is, remember, we had that ad duplex data, and there was some question about whether it was accurate or not. And they had said that 50% of all PCs running Windows 10 were already on the latest update. Now, 50% of approximately 700 million would be 350 million. Microsoft is saying 250 million. And so you can see a discrepancy there. And I think that's...
Yeah, but really, just to play devil's advocate, who are you going to credit? Microsoft or ad, what is it? Ad duplex.
Ad duplex.
Come on.
No, we believe their number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the thing I always said about ad duplex is two things. One is that it needs to be accurate to itself. That's the thing we talk about, like with you know, fitness recorders
or whatever.
Yeah. It's consistent. Yeah. You know, that they're as accurate as they can be. You know, but you're always going to get a subset of the actual user base because they measure Windows or what we now call Microsoft Store app usage. That's where the ads come from. That's where the usage data comes from. So there's a huge segment of the population that doesn't run those apps, and a lot of them are in organizations in the enterprise or whatever, and they're not going to be counted. And so the way I look at it is 250 million, or I guess it would be 350 million, you know, 50% of the PCs out in the world, you know, whatever that means, outside of the enterprise in many cases, were already on the latest update. Microsoft confirms their basic premise, however, which is that this is by far the fastest rollout of any feature update and has rolled out twice as fast as the previous one, which is exactly what Ad Duplex said. So their data is consistent to itself and is accurate to itself, if you will. Mm-hmm. Microsoft at least confirmed, you know, that much of it. But the big issue here, the controversy is this is absolutely not what we're seeing. And anecdotally, I will tell you that the computer I'm looking at right now, I'm actually kind of freaked out this is going to happen during the show.
Uh-oh.
Has now multiple times gone to what I think of as a static screen. You know, back in the... 1970s.
Wait a minute. Did you bonk yourself on the mic or did Sriracha have something to do with it?
Guess who's playing around.
Okay.
Like, sheesh, dude.
So What is the, because this has been happening on my Surface Studio. What is the freeze? I think this is the same thing.
It's a full screen static display.
Oh.
If you have a computer with an external display, you can unplug the HDMI cable, plug it back in, it should come back, I'm told. I've not been able to reproduce that. I've had it happen on a couple different machines. The computer I'm looking at right now is an all-in-one computer, so there's nothing I can plug or unplug, and there's nothing I can do about it except turn it off and turn it back on. So I've been told by a few people that this is almost certainly an Intel driver issue. It is an integrated graphics chipset. I believe it's tied to 1803, by the way, yet another issue with this release. But I had to go through a weird process to get the latest drivers installed because it's an HP. HP often will configure older drivers because they know them to be good or whatever. It actually wouldn't let me install the latest drivers. I forced the issue. There's a way that you could make it work if you go through the device manager and know what files to look for. But I did that yesterday. I haven't had this issue since yesterday. It actually happened to me twice yesterday, which is what led me down this path. But if I disappear, it's because, you know, it does a poltergeist thing, yeah. Which is really weird to see on a computer, especially one that doesn't have a TV card of any kind or whatever. But it did happen to my Intel NUC as well, which again, you know, integrated graphics. I'm hoping that I've solved the problem, but I had the blue screen and green screen issues from before. All of that stuff is anecdotal, but I hear from people. And we talked about this, we joked about it being chatter, and Mary Jo does as well. Obviously, we hear from people on Twitter, via email, in the comments on the website and everything. And I hear from people who have no problems. I mean, no doubt about it. But
same.
The number of people that I hear from who have problems outweighs the others by a factor of 10 to 1, 20 to 1. I mean, but it's a huge margin. Yeah. And I'm just
Right before the show started, a guy said, have you seen this issue yet? Cole McDonald. And he sends me the link. And it's remote app is dead after 1803 is applied. I'm like, nope, haven't seen that one yet. And then there's a huge thread with people, me too. But
I just, I don't know what to say. So my advice to people, maybe this should have been my tip this week, is this thing is fully deployed. What that means is you're going to get it now.
You're going to get it.
Yeah. I mean, if you thought it was coming out fast before, it's literally going to hit the rest of the population, or probably already has. Yeah. And so if you haven't gotten it yet, my advice is to wait a couple weeks, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe the next patch Tuesday we've talked about, and defer those updates for some amount of time just to make sure. I have too many examples of people are having problems, and I have my own problems. That doesn't mean you're going to have problems, but I certainly have had my own issues with the release myself, you know, personally. If you haven't gotten it yet, I would take steps to make sure you don't and give it a couple weeks.
To me, the other interesting thing about the way they wrote the blog post saying it was ready is they covered a lot of stuff up with AI talk, right?
Yes.
We're using AI to roll this out even better. And this is why we can identify problems faster. And this is interesting. They actually cited many of the problems we've heard people having, like conflicts with antivirus. And I think they talked about Chrome instability, like all these problems people kept having and talking about. And they said, you know what? The cool thing about AI is we saw people having these problems, so we could stop the rollout once we saw people getting bad code and hold off on it. And I'm like, you're not really selling this that well. You're selling that, you know, you saw the same problems we all saw.
I joked about something like this on Twitter. You know, this is this notion of AI and trying to outthink things. You know, we moved into this house last year. The refrigerator came with the house. It's not something we would have bought. And what it does is when you it's the kind of opens from the middle. So when you close one or both of the doors, if they don't close all the way after about 30 seconds, it starts making a beeping sound like a truck backing up. And it's the most annoying sound in the world. And I complained about that recently. And my wife said, no, I think it's a great feature. That way, you know, the door is open to the fridge. I said, I've never left a refrigerator door open in my life. It closes automatically. That's a way better feature. It just closes. You know, if the thing just closed, that would be smarter. You know, so, I mean, like, I closed it most of the way. Why can't it just complete the job, you know? And AI like, is this kind of AI is like that. You know, it's like we saw people are having all kinds of problems, and so we fixed it with AI, and thus this is, like, a really successful release. It's like, no, AI should have been used beforehand to make sure that it didn't go out to those computers. You know, like, I just don't quite get it.
I just felt like they said before this release they were using AI to figure out which machines were the most likely to have successful updates. And that's how they decided how to push it. But as we've said before,
is that AI? I mean, how do they know that? I mean, what is AI? Is spell checking and word AI now?
What's a PC?
You know, in other words,
we had this debate on the radio show because I'm of the opinion that people are just saying any algorithm is AI, and it's not.
An if then loop is AI now, or
right? And that's not obviously that's not true to me, and I think to our audience. Once we went kind of hashed this out for a while. We kind of came to the conclusion that if it's going to be artificial intelligence, it has to some degree, write its own code. It has to.
Interesting.
It can't be human. It can't all be human written algorithm. It has to involve machine learning, neural networks,
training
perhaps.
Training the machine.
Training itself, writing its own code. It can't be all human written code, or it's not AI.
Yeah,
but I would.
I mean, that's an interim definition to the real definition.
I don't see what the
AI.
Difference is between, you know, maybe at a theoretical level or whatever, but you know, two versions of Windows 10 ago, they were using some algorithm, some determiner to decide which machine configurations were going to get it and which weren't. And then over time, you know, they would let more in, they'd see how it go and whatever. How is that any different from what they're doing now? It doesn't sound any different.
Well, if they were to incorporate using machine, you know, I think that it's legitimate to say that you could have the machine parse feedback and attempt to make an algorithm that a human couldn't make, right? That would be, to me, that would be AI, I think.
But that's like, you know, you have a self-driving car and it crashes, and then you say, it's good news because the AI told us why it crashed. No.
The AI crashed it,
prevent you from crashing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we've in many ways, we've been beating this thing to death over the past several weeks, but I've never experienced something like this before. And if you just look at Windows 10 specifically, any release, whether it went good, bad, or indifferent, what I saw anecdotally, as we'll call it, out in the world with my own readers and listeners and whatever, you know, roughly matched what Microsoft was seeing. And in the past, when things went bad, you know, they've contacted me and they've contacted other people and they've kind of explained what happened. And, you know, when the anniversary update went south, they were very honest and transparent about it. And they said, look, you know, we screwed up. This won't happen again. Here's the steps we're taking. Mm-hmm. You know, this time, the digging in of the heels on this one is a little weird to me. Again, just because it just is not matching at all. It's not even close.
No. And the worrisome part to me is the whole seekers thing they added as the new wrinkle here. And it's like, okay, even if you are using AI to predict which machines are going to be the most likely to be successful in deploying the update, what about the seeker thing where if somebody just goes and checks Windows Update, they get it, and you're not even looking, is it likely to be successful? You just give it to them.
So
that's worrisome.
What would, aside from admitting it, what would you have Microsoft do? Slow the rollout?
I think I would ask them what made this one not as good as the previous two. Like, what happened?
Let's use the example you just brought up, which is the seeker thing, right? What's the right behavior there? The right behavior there is, okay, this person explicitly went into Windows Update. They loaded this interface, navigated to that page, clicked on the button, and updates were available. If it's something as major as a feature update, here's a thought. Give them the option. Don't just do it. If they're really there seeking that thing, they'll say yes. And then you can run your little thought experiments on them or whatever this baloney is, and you can get your AI feedback or whatever. But I just dumping this on normal people like that, I just feel is irresponsible. You got to give people the option.
Yeah. And I can understand why Microsoft wouldn't want to admit there's a problem. But on the other hand, I also think they would want to fix it.
And I guess if you knew there was a problem, the thing not to do is to go out there and say, this is the best one, the most successful one, the one that we're the most proud of, right?
Yeah.
Just soft pedal it a little.
They're also literally rolling this out more quickly than they have any other update, right? So I'm not saying that they're lying. I don't know what to make of this. I'm confused for sure. But you could kind of see the speed of the roll, the speed of the update over time if they slowed it down. But they're literally coming out and saying, no, it's fully deployed. 30 days later, we're ready. The whole world is ready for this. And I really? I have examples of computers right, you know, within arm's reach for me that are absolutely not ready for this update.
Yeah.
And they all have it. I know, I'm just one person, but
what you said just said now was interesting. You said, I don't think they're lying. I don't think they're lying either, but I think if you go in and parse sentences in their post, you can be like, yeah, this is where they're kind of using words that could mean more than one thing.
Let me make it a little less malicious. there is something that I do think is occurring at Microsoft right now, and you see it in the telemetry feedback hub stuff, like what we're going to implement next, which is there's a bias to the outcome of things. They get data in, and then they have this data that comes out, and it doesn't seem to make sense. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but it's this notion of having the data is great, but what you do with it matters. And I don't feel like they're doing a good job or the right job or whatever, are coming to the correct conclusions, that the data is somehow skewed or they're looking at it in a skewed fashion. And with Terry Myerson gone, and I don't know that these things are related, but obviously there's a change occurring over there. And it looks like in this coming release, for example, we've drifted away from the nonsense stuff that we used to see in the previous updates, and we're getting into some real good productivity stuff, and that's great. So that's a positive change. That's something that's happening here over there. Now with this update thing, I mean, they just seem, it's like when you want an outcome, right? Windows has to be serviced as a service. We have to do this. Show me that it's working. Well, here's the data, Bob or whoever. See, it says it's fine. It's not just fine. It's going fast. It's better than ever. Just push. You know, I feel like they're navigating toward a foregone conclusion rather than accurately seeing what the data says. I don't know who Bob is, by the way. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, Bob?
I think we all met Bob once.
Pretty sure the problem is a guy named Bob.
And his little dog, Clippy. Oh, no. Bob was a dog. Was Bob a dog? No. Bob owned the house.
MS Bob.
Bob never showed up. There was no, it was Bob's place, but you were taking
Bob was
it
the guy with the nerd glasses, right?
No, that's Waldo.
No, in Microsoft, Bob wasn't the
there was a guy
like
with nerd glasses?
Yeah,
he didn't show up on the interface. The dog did.
No, but I think that was probably Bob.
Yeah, it was Bob's house.
Yeah.
But we never saw inside.
We never saw.
Right. No, because it was mostly the dog.
He left.
Oh, Bob.
The dog was the guy.
Bob.
He left. There was a fire in the fireplace.
That's what I'm trying to say.
He left his dog.
Sure.
And he said, come on in. And fast forward to 2018, and we've got vertical Instagram video. The world is a changing place.
It is.
Let me take a pause that refreshes, while you can take care of the pause that destroy.
That is not refreshing. Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans is the number one lender in the country, and it's not just me saying that. It is number one in volume. It is number one, the number one online mortgage lender, according to Inside Mortgage Finance magazine, but maybe even more importantly, is number one in customer satisfaction. You voted at number one at J.D. Power for 8 years in a row. And one of the reasons Quicken Loans is so great is because they like us geeks. They've created a product just for us geeks called Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply, understand the entire process fully, step by step, and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. You can get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. Quicken Loans realized that the mortgage process was not keeping up with the times. It was kind of stuck in the past. So they said, look, we should make a way. You could do it all on your phone at an open house in minutes, get the right rate for you, not have to go to the attic or go call your bank to get old bank statements or pay stubs or anything like that. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, answer a few questions, get the ball rolling. They have trusted partners in all the financial institutions, so with a touch of a button, you share that information. That's everything they need. Then they crunch the numbers in thousands of calculations a second to produce in minutes, based on your income, assets, and credit, all the home loan options for which you qualify. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and you're done. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and then mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, rocketmortgage.com
Equalhousing.com/windows. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/windows. Actually, if I say that, I shouldn't say it because then you'll try to go W-I-N-D-E-R-S. It's W-I-N-D-O-W-S. Yep.
Some wind farm off of Nantucket will get the credit.
Where is Winder? Who says Winders?
Winders is like accent? A southern slang.
Winders?
Okay. Version of
back
Winders.
Off. Winders. Yeah.
I think.
Redstone 5. You know, I have forgotten that Microsoft bought SwiftKey. Way back when.
Yep.
Now it's rearing its head. It's beautiful, it beautiful head once again.
I know. Yeah, so last week we got a new test build of Redstone 5 for fast ring and skip ahead. And it was interesting because Microsoft's blog post that came out with this, when I read through it, I was like, oh man, they finally are adding autoplay blocking to Edge, finally. And that was how I headlined my post about this and everything. And then it was like, oops. Guess what? We actually didn't add that yet. It's coming.
Yeah, it's not in there.
Not there yet.
It's not in the build. I know. I'm so excited to see that.
The thing that is there is SwiftKey. So if you use the touch interface with Windows 10, you know, SwiftKey will, which already exists for Android and iOS, will now work on that. SwiftKey support being added as of Redstone 5. I was surprised they didn't already have SwiftKey support for Windows 10.
Yeah, me too.
But they I guess they don't.
Yeah, it was like, are you sure they don't already do that?
I know.
But yeah.
And then the feature Paul loved the most I saw from his Twitter feed. There's a new setting called Make Everything Bigger that includes a slider for adjusting the size of text across the entire system, including your UWP and Win32 apps. I'm going to use that too. I'm kidding that you liked it, but I'm going to use that one too.
I'm going to play with it. It's Windows has always had that kind of text, you know, big make text bigger kind of setting. It's always been buried somewhere. But what UWP apps really need is true scalability. I think this is tied to the Office simplified ribbon thing that we were talking about last week. You know, they need to do that in UWP so that these apps scale better across different display sizes and pixel densities, but also apps that are displaying text, like a mail app is a great example, need to have something in the app to determine the text size of the content that you're reading. And that's one thing the mail app doesn't do, by the way, which I find very frustrating. You can zoom
press
each
command. I always press like control plus.
Yeah. Plus no.
And control you minus. You can't do that even.
No. That's no. Nice. What you can do is you can, well, there, actually maybe you can. I'm sorry. There is a way, if you have a touch screen, you can pinch to zoom.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's not smart. So if, you know, if it's some block of text and you scroll it out, the words will get bigger, but they pan off of the edges of the window. You know, the whole thing gets big, but
you're
it
just
doesn't
zooming
stay contained.
The whole screen in. And
that's terrible.
That's something Apple pioneered in 2007.
Yeah, no one's saying it's good.
No. Apple pioneered the idea that when you zoom it, it wraps so it fits your screen.
In 2003... At PDC, Microsoft
had it.
Or Longhorn was showing off textual displays that would auto-wrap as you resize the window to multiple columns, around pictures, all kinds of stuff. It was going to be awesome. And that stuff is possible today. I'm just saying they don't do it. I mean, one of the many reasons I don't like that mail app is it's super unsophisticated when it comes to its central job, which is letting me read the email that I get. It's just kind of bizarre.
Isn't Microsoft's real interest in getting you to buy Outlook anyway? So the mail, you know, wow. We had this discussion yesterday at MacBreak Weekly because Alex Lindsay, his pick of the week was the built-in notes app on Macintosh. Yeah. And I don't think it's ever really in the company. The built-in apps on any platform are always a little bit weak, right?
Mary Jo, please chime in with what you learned about Microsoft's attitude about these apps.
You know I'm thinking. Yeah.
Have they ruined Notepad?
Not yet.
No. That's not about Notepad.
What were you thinking?
Well, you were told something about Microsoft's belief about the mail and calendar apps in particular.
So they actually think the mail and calendar apps are kind of the epitome of where they should be going with design and look and feel. Yeah, they think this. So they, when they were talking about redesigning the ribbon for Office, I said, so what are you going to do with mail and calendar? And they're like, well, that's where we're going. That's the aspirational endpoint. I'm like, wait, what?
Yikes.
Is it?
That is everything that's wrong with this platform in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Is that mail app. Yeah. So,
maybe the person didn't understand what I was asking. Maybe. Because I was very surprised by that answer. I was like, oh, I kind of thought you'd replace the mail and calendar apps with Outlook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. With something that made sense. That'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Yesterday, Steve Gibson, I think, talked about autoplay not because Edge is the last browser that doesn't.
Yeah.
And now? No.
Not yet. Yeah.
Still,
nope, not yet.
It will.
Well, by the way, this was in RS5. So even if it was in the build, the general population doesn't get it until October, November.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. This is a pre-release thing.
It's funny because everyone's like, try it with ZDNet and CNET. They're the worst ones. I'm like, we are.
Well, you're sounding like a Fox News personality. not the opposite. All the Fox, all the people like, you know, all the Fox people and like Modern Family's showrunners saying, I hate working for Fox. But I guess I'm going to stay there for a while.
They just sent a check.
Yeah. I'm just sad we do that, but I get why they do it, but I'm like,
you got to do it. Yeah.
So horrible.
And I know the CBS Interactive people, some of them are not real thrilled with what CNET does. Sure. How does SwiftKey look on a bigger screen? Because, I mean, I've only used it in, and I thought it was a very, I used to, it was my default keyboard on Android. I really liked it. But it's, that was a tiny screen.
I haven't looked at it. No. I mean,
they need a better on-screen keyboard, that's for sure.
Yeah, for whatever it's worth, I mean, the Microsoft on-screen keyboard stuff, if you get away from the shape writing type thing, I mean, just the layout of it and the way it behaves and so forth, I always felt like they did a pretty good job in many areas. You know, one of the for example, if you have to type in numbers, you know, on an iOS or Android keyboard, it's just the numbers are like along the top.
Yeah.
And when you switch to number mode on the Microsoft keyboard, it was a number keypad.
Right.
I do like that. It's nice. I
don't use it enough to really hate it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So I shouldn't say.
They've done some good things, and they had WordFlow, of course.
And that's huge to me.
Yeah.
Well, they killed it in lieu of SwiftKey, but then they never implemented SwiftKey, I guess, on the big
SwiftKey had WordFlow too on Android. That's where you draw instead of tapping.
Yeah.
Draw from letter to letter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so
Microsoft calls it like shape writing or something.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
I can't do it. I'm fumble-fingered.
I keep trying to do it, and it's against the patterns I have.
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking. Yeah. Man, I don't know how it would be on it. Like when you're doing it like
on a big screen.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're probably not going to do it on a big screen like a Surface Studio. But if you have a tablet, and you're holding it in two hands,
right?
Yeah, I guess that would be impossible, right? Well, I don't know. You could do it, I guess. Obviously, this made a lot more sense when mini tablets were more of a thing on the Windows side, where you don't really have those anymore. I think it's important just for consistency's sake. I mean, they have this thing. Why wouldn't it be built into the keyboard?
Right.
Plus, there have been rumors of pocketable devices that are probably going to be multi-touch based and would benefit from this. So,
true.
That might be tied to that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Say no more. Wink's as good as a nod to a blind man. Microsoft has released their first test build of Server 2019 with Hyper-V.
Hyper-V. Yeah, so as Windows Client is going towards this fall availability for the next feature release, so is Server. And there's going to be two releases of Server. There's going to be a thing called Windows Server 2019, which is the on-premises server. And then there's going to be this thing called 1809, we think that'll be the name, which is the one that will be a feature update that is not for on-premises. So Microsoft is releasing test builds of these basically in lockstep with the client version. And the one that came out yesterday for Server is the first one with Hyper-V, Windows Server Hyper-V as a separate SKU, basically. And you can have the preview of that for the first time. Didn't sound from the notes like there was a ton of new features in that. It was just kind of like, and Hyper-V server is there, and you can start testing it. There's also a new feature in this build called System Insights, which is a predictive analytics feature that they're building into Windows Server. So that's new in this build. And if you're somebody who liked Project Honolulu, which is the Windows Admin Center console, there is also a new build of that available as of this week. So it sounds like things are rolling along with Server.
Busy, busy, busy.
Does it support the swipe, the Swift keyboard, though?
Probably not. Just guessing.
You know, though.
I know.
I'm thinking about server racks. A lot of times you have the monitor, and then you have to have a drawer for a keyboard.
Yep, just put a screen up there.
Put it on the screen.
Yeah.
Sure.
There actually might be a more sensible thing in the server than a desktop.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to go like this to their desktop.
No. Well, hopefully they're not. But some people do,
I
guess.
That every day. Dun, 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 dun.
It's a little Beethoven-like.
Yeah, the typing cat. Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Microsoft's buying spree continues. They announced the acquisition of a bunch of indie game developers at E3. Now what are they buying?
Yeah, I guess because their fiscal year is winding down, it ends June 30th, they're starting to kind of push through all these acquisitions. So first they had GitHub, then they had the four gaming companies, and then Monday, Flipgrid. Flipgrid is a video discussion platform that's used in both elementary school and higher levels of school, where students can kind of interact with themselves in groups with their teachers, even with their parents and other kinds of groups, through their mobile device, through iOS and Android, and now also through Windows. So yeah, they bought them. They said they're going to turn Flipgrid into a free tool for people who have a valid education address, just like they do with Office 365 education. It looks nice. I had never heard of them. They're Minneapolis-based. They're, I guess, very big in the education market. A lot of people who read this were really excited that it was going to become free because it's fairly expensive right now. $65 per educator per year, $800 per year for a district, $1,000 per year for a school. They're just going to take that away and say it's free.
Nice. That's great.
Yep. Yep. Yeah,
this is the kind of thing you have to do if you want to have a presence in education. Do this.
Yep.
Yeah. So the other issue, of course, is the Google stuff. A lot of this, the usage of this platform is on Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Microsoft said we're going to cancel that. No, they said we're going to continue supporting it.
I do
this
know
is the new
though,
Microsoft,
and maybe this is just since the acquisition, but on the page. If you look at the example screen, let me see. I just lost it. She is using OneDrive. She's sending a OneDrive link.
On an iPhone.
Oh, on an iPhone. Well, actually,
I like when you zoom in how it stays within the size of the screen. It's such a neat feature.
That's a Macintosh. Yeah.
Oh, I see. I see.
It's zooming
those
where the
smart.
It's zooming to where the mouse is, see?
Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. How big can you get it? My gosh.
Andy.
There's people in the font.
Cool.
Yep.
As they say, I think that's a good acquisition. So when does the fiscal year end?
June 30th.
So there's only a few more days, Microsoft, to buy Twit. Just saying.
Like it's like they're on food stamps. You know, if you don't use them by the end of the month, they're gone. You gotta, you know,
that's a long standing corporate tradition. Use that budget or lose it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they bought an AI startup.
Yeah, they did this right before the show started. They bought a company called Bonsai, which is based in Berkeley, California, and they are basically a machine learning company. And interestingly, they were one of the companies that Microsoft Ventures was investing in. So when they're about to kind of make their exit strategy, what happened? Microsoft bought them. Boom.
I wonder if they
get the name. It's BONS.AI.
.AI.
I get it. Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. So some guy named Bonds started it.
Good old Bonds. Bonds.
Bonds. Oh, yeah. He was Bonds Scott. He was the lead singer of ACDC.
Yeah.
Bonds AI. It's Bonds AI.
Bonds AI.
So The interesting thing about this company, too, is they do AI for industrial applications. So that's a nice fit with intelligent cloud, intelligent edge, right? And they do a lot of things around training autonomous systems to accomplish tasks. So you're talking about like training a robot arm to pick up boxes over and over.
They call it machine teaching, not machine learning.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yep. Wow, this is a good acquisition, too.
Another good one. Yeah. So they just did that today. Who knows what they'll do tomorrow or the next day?
They're on a roll. 10 more days. They can go to town.
They could.
I'll put my number in the show notes if, Satya, if you want to give me a ring.
Just add the word AI to a couple of the descriptions on your About Us page.
It's Twit Blockchain AI.
Twit.ai.
Twit.ai. Twit.ai Blockchain. Good. And, and we have no defense contracts.
We use artificial intelligence to deploy our podcast to listeners around the world at scale.
Office 365 news. I hear there's some.
Is this the Adobe Acrobat or Adobe PDF service?
Do you not have the notes in front of you, Paul? Should I read the?
I like to just wing it, Leo. You know,
I can just read it. Dude.
Just playing
Call
of Duty.
On the pulse of the industry. No, I this one's not all that exciting, but Microsoft partnered with Adobe last fall on their e-signature service in particular, and now they've expanded that to include PDF services in Office 365. They don't actually say this, but it's Office 365 commercial, obviously. It's something that administrators will need to implement for their users. But I guess the general idea here is the general idea of PDF from the beginning, which is to finally hit that paperless society that AT&T was promising back in the 80s. And the idea is that you can do complete workflows now from beginning to end without having to have a paper part of the chain, whether it's signatures or other things.
I mean, there's already PDF built in pretty much. You can save as PDF and you can open Edge to view PDFs. But this is a
that's
workflow.
A beautiful example of old Microsoft versus new Microsoft, right? Old Microsoft invented a thing that was exactly like PDF, but was called something else and nobody used. And now they've just put a PDF in where it makes sense, like a normal company.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Evernote comes to Microsoft Teams. Can this be? Is this true?
No. Well, it's...
Because isn't it kind of a OneNote house?
It's kind of, yeah. No, it's just OneNote can now integrate with Microsoft Teams. So one of the...
OneNote or Evernote? Evernote.
I'm sorry. Evernote. Sorry. OneNote is already integrated with Microsoft Teams. And having used it, I can tell you it's terrible. but now you can do the same terribleness with Evernote if that's your that's your choice. And I think this is an effort by Microsoft to expand the use of Teams to smaller, less traditional companies, right? They're competing with Slack as kind of a new thing. So in the old Microsoft model, you have Office 365. You get OneNote. Obviously, you're using OneNote. But I bet a lot of these smaller companies aren't using OneNote. They're using Evernote. So this is a way to mix and match.
I have to say, I liked your little green eggs and ham rant about Teams.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's that? I want to find that.
Oh, man. That's pretty good.
Can you read
entertaining.
That? You want to do a little
reading? I just did the one stanza or whatever.
Well,
but
go ahead.
It inspired me to make a graphic. Like if you, I did the green eggs and Microsoft Teams graphic for Short Takes last Friday. You can see it. You can actually find it if you go to my homepage. It's over on the right. It's the orange graphic,
do it.
But
do it.
Okay. I do not like Teams in a house. I do not like Teams with a mouse. I do not like Teams here or there. I do not like Teams anywhere. I do not like green eggs and Teams. I do not like Teams. Am. Wow. Very nicely done.
I guess he likes Teams.
It was pointed out to me that I made a major error when I did that, which is that Sam I am should have been Sam's I am for Brad.
Oh, Brad would have enjoyed that.
Yes, I would. I definitely mistake. Would enjoy that.
Brad's the one who wants everyone to use Teams at your shop, doesn't he?
Oh, there's always one, isn't there? In every business, there's the one guy. You know, why aren't we using Teams?
We did use Teams, and we collectively decided to stop using Teams.
Oh, really?
Teams,
it's all good.
Yeah. Somebody responded to me. They said, "Well, you know how that story ends, right? The point being that actually at the end, he really likes green eggs and ham. And so he's
right.
His preconceived notions
right.
are wrong.
Yeah. Right.
I think of that more as a murder suicide than a complete turnaround. But
that's terrible.
I just having used Microsoft Teams, however, we have decided to stop using it.
So do you have any groupware solution that you use? Or do you
well,
not need that?
Yeah, so we had been using...
Because you're all distributed, right?
Things. Yeah, so we use Basecamp for projects.
That's good.
We
I like
use
that.
Skype for communication. Yeah. So we just use different things. We do still we have Office 365. We just stopped using the Teams component. It's just really balky the way it works.
We use HipChat. We've used Slack.
Mm. Yeah.
I think is Teams kind of like Slack, right?
Yeah, and Slack is what Mahedi would like us to use. But as I told him, when he heard we were going back from Teams, he said, "Oh, great! Now we can use Slack." And said, "I said I think it's a little early for us to go down another rabbit hole like that. We're already paying for Office 365, so
there's a huge kind of adoption barrier too. I mean, once you in a platform, you're not. It's more difficult to change. You know, I keep saying, "Oh, we should just use." I mean, there's open source Slack alternatives,
yeah.
and I wouldn't mind using something like that and running on our own server and saving a lot of money, but there's so much inertia.
This is like tradition and experience and workflow, and it's hard. And part of our thinking, I just want to go on record as saying, as I told everybody else, this is going to fail and this is a mistake. But whatever, I was outvoted, so. We were using Skype, you know, for communications before, and we've certainly had our issues with Skype. And so one of the hopes was that this would solve some of that problem. And plus, if we had this one solution that did this other stuff, you know, we'd have a single place for everything. And, man, it was bad enough that we went back to Skype. I mean, it's not what you're looking for in a Yelp review, you know?
You're
not very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Skype is probably the worst of the bunch, to be honest.
You would think.
Does Skype have like infinite history and is it encrypted and all that stuff?
No. Right. So, yeah. I mean, we're in kind of a weird holding pattern right now. I don't believe we've gone back to using Basecamp, but that's a problem because big projects are going to come up and now what are we going to do? And
I love Basecamp, but that's overkill kind of for what we do. But if you're doing projects.
It was hard to find stuff. It was like... you know, obviously these projects are all up in like SharePoint or something. And so from within Teams, you know, someone would say, all you have to do is find the whatever project. But that's fantastic. Where is it? And it's like, oh, it's right. Oh, where is it? And then we spend 30 minutes on the call.
Yeah.
Not finding the thing.
No, that's no good.
You know, and it was just the whole thing was it was awful. It was awful.
I really want to look at it. There's an open source server solution called Matrix and a client called Riot.im. It's all open source, so it's free. You completely configure. You have to run your own server. But
yep.
I can't convince anybody to do it.
Sure.
Where are we? And we have all these HipChat groups, and you'd lose all your history, and you know, it goes on and on. Yeah. Microsoft has an ambition in retail.
Yep. They're going to be the ambitions. Amazon of retail.
Actually, you know, the Amazon of China, the number two retailer in China, JD...
Yeah.
Who just took a stake in them? I think it was
Google, wasn't it?
It was Google. Yeah. They, worries me a little bit, they run a warehouse in Shanghai that ships 200,000 packages with four humans.
Wow.
The rest are robots.
Wow.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. What's Microsoft thinking?
Well, this is based on a Reuters report where it sounded pretty credible because they said they said something like, we talked to six people who knew about this. The number was very precise for some reason. Yeah. So they said the way they pitched it, though, was Microsoft's going to go head to head with Amazon Go in the checkout free retail space. But then you read more into the report and it's like, no, they're not going to open stores like that. They're more likely to be working with a partner, somebody like a Walmart.
Yeah.
Right.
They want to add, but that's the face recognition stuff again, right?
Yeah.
Product recognition.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Face recognition and a lot of the other things they have around AI services, cognitive services, Project Connect, you know, which is that package of sensors and a camera that they showed us at Build. So it's like what Reuters is saying is Microsoft's working on kind of pulling all these together into some kind of a prepackaged solution that somebody like Walmart could take and build something to compete with Amazon.
Right.
I think this is smart.
It's interesting because this is where Microsoft's real breadth shows. Almost every time somebody comes up with something, Microsoft can say, oh, yeah, we've been doing that at Microsoft
Research.
We've
been doing that.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah, but you just couldn't figure out how to productize it, right?
It's like Xerox PARC almost, right?
Yeah.
The genius of this is it allows Microsoft to be on the other end of something they've been on the receiving end of a lot in their existence, which is, in this case, hatred of Amazon, right? Retailers hate Amazon for all of the obvious reasons. And if they could get some kind of an automated technology like this that would make the shopping experience more seamless for people, not from Amazon.
Oh, I'd love walking into a Walmart.
That would be huge.
Taking stuff off the shelf and leaving. Well, I do that already, but I would like to do it legally.
Yeah, exactly, without having to run. I think that future is a lot closer than people believe. It's funny, I don't like going to stores. I get the heebie-jeebies after about 10, 15 minutes in a store, but we had to go to Best Buy recently, which is like stepping back into the 1990s. It's delightful, people. If you haven't gone to a Best Buy recently, you should give that a shot. It's funny. They have TVs and things. But we had to get a stereo for my daughter's car, and they install it for free there. They do everything. It's the type of thing you can't do at Amazon. It's one of the few things left. Mm-hmm. And there's some advantage, I think, to certain purchases, whether it's a large and expensive TV or refrigerator or whatever the big box item is, to go and actually see the thing and then order it on your phone from Amazon. But retail stores are dying, and this is like a lifeline, I think, for these guys. Yeah. And I think it's something that could save. It's so weird to talk about it this way because the big box stores killed all the local stores. Now Amazon's killing the big box stores, and what we're nostalgic for is Best Buy, or Borders or whatever, like these once humongous corporations. But I think this is smart, and I think it's got the potential to be, something that those companies will adopt.
You know, it's funny because Google has been also working with Walmart because, again, it's the anti-Amazon axis.
Yeah.
Yep.
It'd be kind of funny if Google and Microsoft ended up in bed on this one. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
Well, that's what a dominant competitor will do to everyone else.
That's right.
It kind of puts them together.
Yeah, that's right. The axis of not evil.
Amazon.
And here's some really good news. And I was so glad to hear that Office 365 is being completely rewritten in JavaScript.
So I wasn't going to write about this. I
wasn't
saw this,
either.
It was such a tiny kerfuffle, really. Just kind of spoke, right?
In a huge way, though. I mean, he went down this big list of this is being rewritten. It was like the Oprah thing. This is being rewritten. This one's being rewritten. And I looked at the people were pointing it to me. Other blogs wrote about it. I looked at it and I was like, God, this guy just had no idea what he's talking about. And he works for Microsoft, so it was kind of tough. And I just said, well, I could tell off the top of my head just looking at it, like half. I know half of this is wrong, and I think the other half is wrong too. And maybe he's commingling things. And obviously, this Office 365 stuff on the web and the websites have JavaScript. I mean, this, whatever.
At least he could have said TypeScript. Use a Microsoft product here.
Yeah. So here's the thing. But then he got on Reddit, and he blamed Twitter's character limit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no. No.
No, that doesn't work anymore.
No. So now I'm like, I'm going to step through everything he wrote and explain why it's wrong. This is ridiculous. And the long story short, Microsoft is using a variety of technologies, as you would expect, using what makes sense where it makes sense. Office 365 is a huge and complex series of products that involves mobile apps, desktop apps, web apps, online services, all kinds of combinations of things. And so the stuff running on Windows desktop is going to be written in C# and C++. The stuff running on the web is going to be written in HTML5 and JavaScript and CSS and whatever else, React maybe. It doesn't matter. It's just nonsense. Like this notion that Microsoft has suddenly dropped, decades of legacy software so that they can move everything to the web and all of the performance that they would enjoy from such a move.
At the end, like after he kept backtracking and changing the story, that, okay, what it really is some of the front end pieces are written in JavaScript / TypeScript, but we're not rewriting the whole thing.
But his point literally was, if you go back to the first thing he wrote, he said literally in each case, we are rewriting or have rewritten point by point by, like Teams. Teams has not been rewritten. Teams has been written in actually TypeScript, like you said, which, you know, compiles to JavaScript or whatever. But, you know, and was designed from day one to be a progressive web app. It's going to be a progressive web app at some point. Neat. But that's literally the most recent example of a Microsoft Office 365 app of some kind. I think we had this conversation recently that when you look at Office 365 and you look at the apps they've added over the past few years, especially on the commercial side, the vast majority of them are web apps. So Planner, you know, the graph stuff that's all up in the web, it's the web interfaces are going to involve JavaScript. It's not a surprise. We're not still using VBScript. You know, I would have ignored it, but I just didn't appreciate the, Twitter's character limit, you know, sorry. So I can't call Twitter, you know, it's like, guy, come on.
C# is shorter than JavaScript. I mean, he could have saved, you know, 8 or 9 characters. Just use C#.
He could have saved a lot of characters by stop using the phrase rewriting. You know, that would have
completely rewritten.
Right,
that's a lot of characters, right?
I know. There. That would be a lot of work.
Yeah. Completely rewritten in JavaScript. Wow. Let's do it all in F#. That's what I want.
No big deal. Yes. Everything should be functional.
That's functional.
The new Microsoft.
Yeah.
He got caught up in that whole thing where they're trying to make the code bases work the same across different platforms, I guess, right? Is that how he got all?
Well, I'm sure the UI is somewhat JavaScript-y, right? Is the Chrome all
maybe.
JavaScript?
I don't know. It's not. I think the answer is no in most cases. Yeah. It depends
on
where the app
is. So this makes no sense at all.
It makes no sense. He seems so excited to reveal this to the world. I mean, I didn't want to burst his bubble exactly, but then he pulled the Twitter card. And I said, oh, no.
You do know you have 280 characters now, Sean.
You know, you can also say something like, here's the thought, to say, my mistake.
My bad.
Everything I just wrote was wrong.
Wrong.
You know.
The funny thing is he ends the tweet with no big deal, NBD.
Yeah.
Like, it's like there's an intent in that tweet, but it's just
I think he's enthusiastic. I think he's a web guy. And I think he sees how deeply Microsoft is involved in the web stuff, which they are, right? Okay. Yeah. And there would be an entirely accurate and perfectly acceptable thing to get excited about there. And he overreached.
It's time now for our weekly Android segment.
All about Android.
All about Android.
Now I'm going to have to look at the notes.
Paul. What could that be about? Maybe your decision to use Microsoft Launcher on your Android device?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of Microsoft guys coming, whether you go to Android or iOS, you know, this is kind of transition you undergo. But I was thinking, you know, I look at launchers like people on Android do, right? You can replace the home screen, the lock screen, the keyboard, all the stuff on Android. It's kind of neat. It's one of the big advantages of the platform. I tend to stick with the stock stuff unless it's totally broken. You know, the Pixel launcher on my phone, I think, is pretty great. It's simple enough. It works well, et cetera. But I hear from a lot of people on the Microsoft side. They're really interested in this. And there's still guys, you know, the guys that are kind of clinging to Windows Phone and their cold, dead fingers and so forth. They look at this mobile thing and they're like, well, if I was going to do Android, I'd want to do this, and the other thing. And how does that kind of make sense? So I've made this transition. I've been trying to see how much of Microsoft on mobile makes sense, right? Because if you use a desktop PC, for example, you're going to be very heavily invested probably in the Microsoft world. There's a lot of stuff there that makes sense. It's productivity and focus and so forth. If you're going to use a tablet, typically that thing's going to be like a media device. I think an iPad makes more sense than an Android device. At this point, the content and the app ecosystem is excellent. But phone is kind of like this different thing because phone does everything, right? Phone can be productivity, it can be games, it can be content, you know, movies and TV shows and everything, depending on who you are. And the way I use a phone, honestly, it's mostly about productivity. And the content consumption I do is really just reading for the most part. I don't watch movies on my phone or anything like that. So I wanted to see if it would make sense to use the Microsoft Launcher. If the integration stuff between the desktop and the phone, which in many ways are the two places I get work done virtually, would be advantageous.
You know, the funny thing is, I'm looking at this on your screen on your site, it looks a lot like the Pixel launcher. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, so different. Actually, I worked really hard to make that happen.
Okay.
It actually doesn't look like that by default.
The only difference is you'd have to use Bing.
Yeah, right. So, and that's the thing. So, I feel strongly that the Google Assistant is the thing that makes sense. Other people might argue that, like, Alexa makes sense. So, does the use of Bing and Cortana in a search box on the phone get in the way, or does it, you know, is it a problem? And the answer is no. That it's kind of an insular. It doesn't really matter if you want to ask someone what the time is or what the weather is or whatever, what my next calendar appointment is. You know, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not going to start buying Cortana speakers and putting them all over my house or anything. but using that thing through the UI on the phone is not a big deal. I'm also not going to replace the stock assistant, the default assistant, I guess, on Android with Cortana. I'm just not. It's just not as powerful, you know. But it doesn't get in the way, so it's okay. You know, one of the things I just wrote about today was the notion of using Microsoft Edge on mobile. And it's kind of weird to say because I've been a big critic of Microsoft Edge on the desktop. But on mobile, actually, Edge is better in some ways than Chrome is, right? And so one of the ways that's been true all along is it has this reading mode. It's one of the things that Chrome doesn't do. So if you want to read an article with any of the crap, the ads and all that kind of stuff, that's built into Edge just like it is into Safari on the iPhone. It's not something you can do in Chrome on mobile. The thing they're about to add, I guess it's available in the beta, which I'm on and I don't see it yet, but apparently in the beta version of Microsoft Edge for Android, it's also going to include the ad blocker plus ad blocking.
Wow.
So, right. So when you put those two things together,
you'll never see Google do that. Wow.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So given that that Edge on mobile is using the Chrome rendering engine, you're not missing anything.
Right.
You have that at, you know, what you're not getting is password and bookmark syncing to the desktop version of Chrome, right? Now you can go to the desktop version of Edge, import that stuff, and then it's available in Edge, but you know, you're not going to get that kind of cross synchronization. And I'm trying to decide if that's a big deal or not. The truth is, it's probably not. I don't use my bookmarks a lot on mobile. I do use the password stuff a lot on mobile. And one thing I really like about Android is that you do that password sync goes to apps now too, which is really cool. But I can sync that to Edge once. It's there. I mean, I may add or change some passwords over the next few months or something, and maybe I'll run into issues, but it's interesting. It's an interesting exercise. And I think one of the advantages of Microsoft Launcher, because, you know, you commented, for example, that picture looks a lot like the Pixel Launcher. It does, because that's the way I wanted to make it. But
that's the point.
It doesn't have to be like it's the customization of this launcher, like the possibilities are rather incredible. In fact, the only thing I can't change, and I'm hoping someone knows the answer to this, if you look at that picture, there's a button in the middle on the bottom in the dock, and that's the button you press to bring up the apps. I hate that thing being there. Like, what I want to do is swipe up on the screen.
Oh, yeah,
show the
apps. I don't like it either. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's old-fashioned. Like, that's how Android used
Google
to be.
Google doesn't do it anymore, yeah.
Yeah, I want to use that space for an app.
You must be running Android P, right? Because you've got that new home button.
So that's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and it works fine with it. It's fine, right? So, in other words, you put this launcher on here, you don't lose any of the cool stuff from Android P. For example, they have like the new multitasking interface and the gestures, you know, which I've enabled, you can see on the screen. None of that stuff goes away by using this launcher, right? Yeah, it's just a user interface. So it's interesting. I could picture using this full time, no doubt about it. But I think what I'm trying to get towards is there a point where timeline integration, for example, puts this thing over the top, right? Where I have been browsing something on my phone at night, I get up in the morning, I'm like, oh, right, I was doing that thing last night, and I can bring it up on my computer here. Will that put this over the top? Does that make sense? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
It's funny because I've been using Timeline a lot on Windows. I actually really like it.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be nice on the desktop. I mean,
it's a little power user-ish at this point. I don't know how normal people would react to it. But you can connect your phone to the PC now. Obviously, that's going to get even more sophisticated in the next version. So we'll see. I'm trying, I guess.
Interesting. You know, one of the reasons this works, though, is because really on a mobile device, most of what you do by launching an app. And, you know, as long as the app launcher is the same, you know, that's not going to, you know, you can launch an app, you launch an app.
Yeah.
But I do think that we're coming to a time, and I think Apple actually kind of has started this with the new Mojave, where the actual operating system gives you a lot of functionality of the apps. Google's doing it with Progressive apps and so forth, so that you don't have to launch an app. And I could see Microsoft doing this as well. I mean, that would be an interesting thing with Launcher, to start letting you not go into an app, get in this modal thing where you're now using an app. I don't know if that would work. Would that work on mobile? Maybe not.
I don't know. This goes back to the original Windows Phone thing, right? Where they, obviously there were live tiles, which were ways not to have to go into the app. You know, there was live data.
Yeah, you're right.
You could kind of look at it. But they also had hubs, and hubs were a way to tie together multiple apps and services into a single interface that was kind of theme-based, which, you know, was the Microsoft thing from Neptune in 1997, like activity centers, right? They've been working on this kind of thing for many, many years. The notion that you shouldn't be thinking like Instagram or Facebook. Like, you're like, I want to do photos. And there's this thing on your phone called Photos, and Photos has all your photo stuff. And, you know, it's a good idea. It's not something I think they can do on a platform they don't control. So a lot of people from the Windows Phone world look at Microsoft Launcher and think, well, this isn't for me. It doesn't have live tiles. It doesn't have hubs.
I think they could do a lot of that. I really do. Well, Android's so open.
No, it's not that they couldn't do it. It's that so few apps would take advantage of it in a way that made sense.
Yeah.
It would make it awkward. You know, so if Microsoft's apps all had live data on them on the tile and then Google's didn't, it would be like, it makes it less interesting.
Okay, I have a completely off-topic question. Mm-hmm. Is there a keyboard shortcut to the timeline?
Yes. Windows key plus tab.
Windows key tab. Oh, instead of the alt tab, Windows key tab. Oh, thank you.
That and other keyboard shortcuts can be found in my book, Windows 10 Feels.
I really should get a copy of that. I've been meaning to. No, that's very handy because now I will use Timeline more. That's great. That's really great.
Yeah, and if you haven't used it, when you go into Timeline, I've already done this, so I can't see the thing, but it will give you a couple of days, but then you get down to the bottom, and there's a little thing you can accept, and it will give you much more.
I go back to May 22nd.
I go to the 21st. Yeah, same thing.
Awesome.
It's kind of incredible.
It's so great. I like workspaces anyway. You know, I like the idea of having multiple workspaces. So it's really just workspaces on steroids now,
this to me is realizing the promise of virtual desktops, because there are people who like to organize their work in this kind of a way, but the problem is it's not persistent. And so this is nice because it's persistent. It's persistent across devices. So if you have multiple devices, multiple PCs, you're going to see all that stuff. And if you have multiple devices, which is a little tough right now, but it's certain Microsoft apps, and there'll be more in the future on mobile. If you're using the Microsoft launcher, that stuff's supposed to be in there as well. And that's one of the advantages of using it. And that's one of the reasons I'm testing it.
So somebody in the chat room, Eternal Ozzy, no, Quika, says if you hold the app launcher icon, you can bring up a menu and get rid of it.
Where's this thing?
Then
look at this.
Then it will be perfect.
Oh, you could remove it. Who is this person?
He's your new best friend, Quika.
I love you.
I love you, Quika. Because you don't need that anymore.
So I looked. If you go into settings, there's all these settings related to the dock, to the app drawer. And you're like, it's got to be in here somewhere. You just press and hold on. That's beautiful.
Mm. Yay.
Thank you.
I have Launcher on my Android phone, and I'm just always kind of like, what is it doing for me that I wouldn't be able to do if I didn't have it?
Bing.
Yeah.
Gives you Bing access.
Woo. Actually, okay, so there are things. Like I said, you get that timeline integration, right, out of the box. And that will help for apps that are not explicitly supporting timeline themselves. So Microsoft's apps will, you know.
And getting like notifications from my phone on my desktop.
You could do that without the launcher.
You could do that without launcher.
Yeah, I have the tip I'll be talking about later today. It is with regards to Microsoft Rewards, and if you're in Microsoft's loyalty program, you actually get credit for doing things to the UI. Like, so you run a search from here, that's probably 5 points or some ridiculous thing. Mm. Approximate street value of 0.001 cents or something, but it adds up. If you do a lot of searching from your phone, that might be one reason. It really is designed to kind of reward people for sticking with the Microsoft stuff, I guess.
Okay. Christian C in our Mixer chat room says there's a setting in the personalization dock
about this.
Settings. Yeah,
I can't tell you how many times I've looked at that. I can't. Looking at it now. In dock. Yeah, that's where I went. Enable dock. Dock icons. I don't see an option for get rid of that stupid button. But
get
I
rid
mean,
of
maybe
the stupid button. That's the problem.
Yeah, I can't tell. Like I said, I've looked at this so many times.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm glad to know about that. And seriously, thank you.
Thank you to both our chat rooms. Moving right along, we're just whizzing through this.
Keep this one as brief as possible.
Microsoft Edge for Android. Oh no, you already said that one.
We did that. No,
Xbox games.
Two small notes. Actually, I did write a bigger piece today about.
Paul. Go for it.
Just do it. Just do it.
Well, no, actually, okay. Here's something I think Mary Jo would appreciate.
I just want to say.
Yeah.
It's Pho Day at the Twit Studios.
Pho Day?
Pho. P-H-O.
Pho.
So I'm going in the other room, so take your time, Paul.
Is it like Vietnamese soup or something?
Yeah. Okay.
Pho.
Well, okay, so Mary Jo, maybe you'll appreciate it. Let me start off with something I think you will appreciate. The E3 press conference occurred. Microsoft announced a bunch of games. Didn't talk about a lot of hardware. But they did mention that they're going to be next generation Xbox consoles. And they did talk about how their future's in the cloud and they're going to do this, the game streaming thing. Mm-hmm. The gaming world is kind of interesting. There are these people who, it's like they have these traditions that things have to be a certain way and whatever it is. And I think tied into this is there's this huge emphasis on consoles. And the gaming press is super focused on Microsoft's making more Xbox consoles. And I read this article in Polygon, which is a game website about here's everything Microsoft said about the next Xbox consoles. And it's actually kind of a fascinating read if you look at it through the right lens, because everything that Microsoft talks about when they talk about the next generation console, I think, is actually about the cloud service. And what I mean by that is, there's going to be a new console. There's going to be something that's like the Xbox One X. It's going to be more frame rate, more 4K. It's going to be an incremental step up. It's going to be fine. It's what we expect now, from Microsoft. But in the same sense that the cloud is the future of Microsoft generally, cloud is the future of Xbox specifically. It is the reason they're keeping this business, not to keep losing money on hardware, because this is the future. So when people have come to me and they've said, you used to say that Microsoft should sell Xbox and look, they're making this extra investment. Like, look how wrong you were. And my response to that is basically they're actually killing that part of Xbox that I thought they should have sold. And they're going in this completely new direction. And it is tied to Satya Nadella and the new direction and all that kind of stuff. But they found a way for gaming to make sense in the new Microsoft. And, when they talk about things like backward compatibility, which is a huge part of the Xbox platform, it does make sense from console to console. But I think it makes even more sense that your investment as a gamer, whether you bought games on the original Xbox, the 360, the Xbox One, Xbox Play Anywhere, which has to do with games that run on multiple platforms. The new thing, the new service is what expands this out to multiple hardware devices and will involve many more games now than we have on Xbox Play Anywhere. So I think that's actually a profound thing. And I think people are kind of missing the script a little bit on it because everyone's like, oh my God, they're going to make a new console. It's like, okay, they are. But I don't think the console is a big deal. I'm going to get one day one. I want it. I get it. I don't mean it like that. But as far as like the future of this thing, the reason it exists, the reason Phil Spencer is reporting directly to Satya Nadella is not because they're making another console and they think hardware is a business. Right. It's because of this cloud thing. This is why.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like that about Surface too. People get so excited when there's going to be a new Surface, right? And it's like, oh my God, what are the specs? What are this? What are that? And I'm like, you know what? The reason they make Surface is to sell Microsoft 365 services. That's why. It's not because they're making some device that nobody else can make or nobody else will make. They're trying to show the way with reference designs, but Surface hardware is a very small part of Microsoft's overall business. And always will be, I believe.
They kind of said that. I mean,
they did. Yeah.
The original description of the first Surface was that it was a way to surface Microsoft's software at the time, you know.
Right.
And show it in the best possible light. Like it was a stage of sorts, you know, for the stuff that they really sell.
Services. Yep.
Yeah. Now, the rest of this Xbox stuff is going to be a lot less interesting to you. But in keeping with the backward compatibility stuff, one of the things that's been really cool for me personally is that Microsoft has, over time, added more and more of the Call of Duty games to backward compatibility. And this week, they added Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is awesome. And I believe now that every major Call of Duty game that's ever been on the 360 or newer, so Call of Duty 2 on, is now available on backwards compatibility, meaning if you have the latest hardware, you automatically get all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I spent a good portion of yesterday, for scientific reasons, playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. it's just still great. And the other thing is, I don't know if you saw this. Fortnite is just like the biggest thing in the world, right? So it's what they call a battle royale game. It's changing the game industry, and whether that's for good, bad, or indifferent is kind of unclear. But Fortnite is so successful that
Do you actually like Fortnite?
So in the world of battle royale games, and I really only have experience with two of them. So it's PUBG, you know, PlayerUnknown's Battleground, which is kind of the Microsoft entry, and this one. Mm-hmm. I think Fortnite made some good decisions with it with regards to performance and graphics quality and so forth. So it plays better. Mm-hmm. There is a construction element to this game that I can't say I completely understand. Like, in other words, you parachute into this world, you have some number of time before the battle starts, and you can build things, which are like fortifications for yourself. Like PUBG, you just run from building to building, find guns, and you shoot each other. Right. I like that kind of game better, but PUBG runs so poorly on the Xbox, I just can't play it. Mm-hmm. PUBG is a little bit more like Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. I've always sort of said that these kind of games could be a game mode in Call of Duty, and Activision is going to test that theory with the next release because they're making a battle royale mode. But I think this is the beginning of the end for Call of Duty. I think that
interesting.
Yeah, because they've been the best-selling game every year since, I don't know, at least Modern Warfare. And it's over. And the reason it's over isn't because Fortnite is, you know, better or whatever. But what Fortnite is better at is this thing that I think is going to be the biggest thing in the world, which is esports. Mm. And, you know, somebody on Twitter had said something to me, you know, I don't understand the notion of people sitting around watching other people play video games. And I said, well, do you sit around and watch other people play basketball or, football on TV? I mean, we do that right now. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. It's really not that much different. And the money that's getting poured into this stuff is so enormous.
I was skeptical, but I've become a believer after Fortnite. Fortnite was the one that I really enjoyed watching.
Oh, that's okay. So I'm not the type of person who would sit there and watch people play this, but maybe that changes. I mean,
I think it'll change, Paul. And some of this has to do with, what I did learn watching the Fortnite Pro-Am was that they need directors that are as good as the major league sports directors who can follow the action, because stuff was happening off screen, and then they have to get commentators and play-by-play guys who also can add to it.
Who can speak?
They're not bad, but they need to get better, and they will.
It's just not professional yet, but it will happen. It will. Yeah. So you know,
did you see though what they're doing in Arlington?
In Arlington,
they're building a esports arena. Wait a minute, let me find this.
Arlington, Virginia.
Wait a minute. Arlington officials last year. This is in the Journal today. Arlington, Texas. Mm-hmm. We'll start construction on a 100,000 square foot arena for live video game competitions. And it's one of a number, according to the Journal, of growing number of venues dedicated to esports. This is about to break out.
You know, nerds are going to kill athletes off, and they're going to do it from the comfort of their couch. Yeah.
Fortnite, you know, the Epic Games, which does Fortnite, has said we're going to put $100 million into esports prizes for Fortnite. 100 million.
Yeah, 100 million. I know it's incredible, and the prize, the prize number is like over the next few years, it's just going to go up astronomically. This is going to be a big problem for the Call of Duty, because Call of Duty is a big deal in the context of its own thing. Like, they've, you know, it's bigger than Hollywood movies. It's whatever it is, but
it could be fun to watch. It would be fun to watch Call of Duty.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it could be, but it's a different kind of experience. There's a kind of fast, visceral, these things happen more quickly, and they're in. Yeah. It's a different kind of thing. I mean,
well, so what we're going to see is games designed like for this, I think, is what we're going to see. Because
exactly.
Yeah, Overwatch is hard to watch because it's just too fast. It's too furious.
Mm. Yeah.
Even so, Fortnite's a little fast.
Fortnite to me looks like Overwatch, but it's. I mean, my God, is it a ripoff of PUBG? Like, it is so obviously PUBG. You parachute onto an island. In Fortnite, you use a glider to glide into an island. You know, the graphics look like Overwatch, a kind of Pixar / cartoon type graphics. But that moves quick, and that's part of, I think,
the
appeal.
It's really fun.
Mm. Yeah, it works great across different devices.
And there's also they did add something that PUBG doesn't have, which is building. You can build forts and defenses.
Yeah, that's right.
But Fortnite was a failure. They saw PUBG and they said, "Oh, we could do battle royale." And then they gave it away.
Yep.
But they make more money in digital goods.
I think it's going to kill Call of Duty.
Wow. I don't know. Yep. Just because something becomes well, I don't know. That's interesting. You think it'll be like football, soccer, baseball, kind of?
In the world of what I would call competitive video games, right? Excluding sports, which for some reason really never took off as a esport type thing. Call of Duty was it, right? Call of Duty was the thing that people played, and people went to ad hoc arenas to do live events and whatever. It's the type of thing I used to go up the street when I was in Dedham and play with guys live, because there's a kind of a fun competitive thing to doing it in person. This is going to kill that.
Part of the appeal of the esports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that these guys can talk to each other and hear each other, and that's part of the fun. They're sitting across from each other. So really, all of the excitement without any of the muss and fuss of learning how to play the game.
Way back when Doom was still a thing, and I worked at a college in Arizona, we used to go in on weekends to use the projectors in each of the classrooms to project Doom up onto the wall, and then we could scream at each other through the walls. And it was the greatest thing in the world. And it was really like like 25 years ago. It was a long time ago. But Doom. Remember, Doom was not IP based, right? Doom was networking based, and that's the type of network we had at the school. So, you know, we didn't need the internet; we just needed the local network. It was fantastic.
Now let me show you.
That type of stuff is fun.
It is fun. LAN parties are really fun, and I think that this is going to have some of the appeal of that for people who've never, you know, of a different generation who've never done it as we have.
Right.
If I could type on this keyboard, I would show you. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know who's all big into this is Dr. Pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Dota.
Yeah, but he watches a lame game, though. That's a terrible game.
He goes to Seattle for the Dota tournament every year for, like, days on end and sits there in an arena.
Well, as far as that being a big deal, I think that Fortnite is going to exceed any esport type thing like that. There'll be other games, right, for sure, and different game types. But this is the breakout. This is where this goes big.
I've lost control of my computer, but I could show you on the Windows machine. Don't mind the bon me. That's just this is an arena. This is the Blizzard Entertainment Arena, 74,000 square foot arena in Burbank. But they see they're playing Overwatch.
Yep. How many people can sit?
I don't know. Let me see if I can find it. But it's 70. It's huge.
It's some several thousands.
Yeah, it's thousands. In Las Vegas, a 30,000 square foot esports arena in Las Vegas, which replaced a nightclub in the Luxor hotel.
So you know what those two places have in common? They're places that could not support a professional sports team.
Well, Vegas has a
pretty much. Well, now they do, but
very good
professional
sports team. But
right, but. You know, this is all you need is a room.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and they have bleacher seats for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a hard. This is a lot cheaper than building a sports arena, obviously. Mm. And I would imagine the attendees probably consume far more food and beer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes. Right? Yes, they do.
And
the difference between the so-called athletes and the people watching is a lot less from a physical fitness standpoint.
Exactly. Although, if you've ever been in a Niners game, it's not exactly a fit crowd.
That's what I mean. In other words, it's sports, the golf is bigger, but at esports, it's a lot closer.
Right.
Some of these guys will probably have to be wheelbarrowed in, you know. It's a different kind of thing.
Watch on Mixer, if you get a chance, watch the Fortnite Pro-Am, because it was a $3 million purse, all for charity, even better, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't a huge crowd. I was surprised. They did not fill the stadium. They had, I think it was the best thing I've seen to date in terms of play-by-play and action. Hmm. Although there were a couple of notorious times where they missed important action because the directors didn't have the competence to really pick the shots. So they got to work on that. But that's all solvable.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I think it's fascinating. I was not a believer at all. I really
I wasn't. My initial reaction to esports was the same as many other people's. Like, why would anyone want to? You know, my son used to watch people play video games,
right?
Probably on YouTube or whatever.
Well, that's what started this, right? Is everybody watching YouTube?
Well, I asked him. I said, "What are you? Why are you doing this?" And his goal was to find strategies for the games that he liked, so he could be better at them himself,
right?
And that's probably
how you start.
Part of the reason younger people would watch real sports.
I bet you a lot of the League of Legends viewing on Twitch was really about learning. I've asked people, what do you watch for fun or you watch to learn? A lot of them are learning skills or think they are. It's aspirational. Yep. Paul, you probably think you're getting better basketball player at watching the Celtics. I mean, there's a little aspiration.
Not this year, Leo. But
I just want you to know
I've ever seen in my life this year.
Microsoft's competition for Twitch, Mixer, has become a huge home for us. They love us. We have a lot of viewers there. They even have Paul and Mary Jo icons, little heads.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. So
we've made it, finally.
I want to have bobblehead night.
Where
we can do it.
The show gets,
we can do it, a bobblehead night. Virtual bobblehead.
Stupid, you can just twick it with your finger.
Mixer.com/twit if you want to try it out. Yeah, there's even a little chat room going along with it. It's pretty interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. There's no Brad icon. Another reason you might like it.
Yeah, that might be
great.
A win.
Win-win. Lifelike.
All right, we done with Xbox? Should we move to the back of the book?
Yeah.
I'm going to put my Bon Mi aside. There was no pho.
No pho?
Yeah. They said, we can't do soup. It'll spill.
Yes. Bon Mi is pretty delicious.
Bon Mi's good, too. And we had a lovely shrimp spring roll. Hot pot's good. Nice. Love hot pot. You know, spicy noodle dishes, they're pretty much the same worldwide. Whether you call it hot pot, pho, ramen, cup of noodles, it's all the same.
I like when you can put meat in something and it cooks in like 2 seconds.
I love that.
You know?
We had shabu shabu with Kobe beef in Osaka.
Okay.
It was to die for. I mean, it was.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Sorry, Mary Jo. Our show today, this is the Xbox and meat segment of the show.
It is.
I have a lot to say about both topics.
Yeah, Mary Jo has zero. Our show, now, if we want to talk about cats, we'll get Mary Jo in there on that.
Yeah. Or tofu.
Or tofu. Well, you know, we had some tofu spring rolls and some shrimp spring rolls.
I bet they were good.
Karsten very cleverly cut the tofu spring rolls first and then cut the shrimp spring rolls.
Nice.
We did have to inquire if anybody was any of the meat eaters were allergic to tofu. There's always someone. Our show today brought to you by this. Actually, I got when we first started talking to Moogsoft, I was in Japan and I really kind of got this vision of the poor IT guy in a pachinko parlor. You know, those are the big casinos now in Japan. They used to be a machine where you'd drop metal balls and it would go ching, ching, ching. But now it's electronic. It's amplified. If you've never been in a pachinko parlor, man, it's the loudest and most crazy, worse than any Vegas casino. And I was standing there thinking, this is what it's like to be the IT person when all those alerts and tickets are lighting up your monitor like crazy. You know, something's gone wrong. and you get 500 messages and all from all different, you know, plugins. And you can't be productive in that environment. All you can be is crazy, stressed out. That's why we love Moogsoft. Moogsoft reduces the noise. It takes that pachinko parlor, turns it into a zen garden. It's the Moogsoft AI Ops platform, an algorithmic IT ops platform that reduces IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. Guaranteed. You still get, no, you're not turning anything off. You still get all your existing IT tools, all your alerts. But what they do is they combine events. They correlate them into actionable work items. They call them situations. So instead of getting 100 different things and making the situation in your head, it takes those, parses them, puts them together, and you get a situation. So you can focus on tackling it and solving it instead of trying to spend half the time figuring out what the heck's happening. I'll give you a testimonial from one of their customers. You might have heard of them, HCL Technologies. They do a thing, an award-winning thing called the Dry Ice platform. They're a global IT managed service provider. A lot of their customers use Dry Ice. In the events management layer of Dry Ice is Moogsoft AI Ops. And HCL Technologies says Moogsoft has helped clients streamline operational workflows, reduce time in the detect to correct lifecycle of incident tickets, and they have experienced a 33% reduction in mean time to restore. So they're happy. That means they can support more customers with service quality, keeping operational costs low, efficiency high. You'll be happy just because it won't be like an explosion in your brain. Moogsoft AI Ops, reduce your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% right now, and as a result, be more productive, be more efficient, and be happier. It's the Zen Garden. Moogsoft.com, Moogsoft.com. You can get a demo there. Moogsoft.com, and we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, let's start the back of the book with a tip of the week from Mr. T.
So I kind of discussed this earlier, but I've been aware of Microsoft Rewards, and Microsoft used to have other rewards programs, but now they're all tying them all into the one rewards program.
Bing Rewards?
Yeah, that used to be a thing. Xbox Rewards used to be a thing. Now it's all Microsoft Rewards. So you earn points, doing different things across the Microsoft ecosystem, and then you can use those points to enter contests or to actually buy things. You have to really work at it. I've been doing it for 4 or 5 days, and I think I've accrued about $1 worth of credit or whatever. But you know, it's if for some reason you're using Microsoft Edge, you're using Bing. That stuff can kind of add up, and Microsoft has little challenges you can do. You can get points, from using the Microsoft launcher I talked about earlier. It's kind of an interesting thing to look at. You should look it up if you are using Microsoft products and services. It's worth looking into in the same sense that, if you stay at hotels or fly on airlines or whatever, it's always worth just getting into the customer loyalty program that they will have, because you never know. Like at some point, my next trip to New York, for example, we're staying for free because of points we accrued from a credit card or whatever. I mean, it's, like that kind of thing. Well, not from the Microsoft Rewards credit card.
No, but, Yale Club, but okay.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's, that's for sure. So I just sort of re-examine this because Microsoft is transitioning the Xbox Rewards program to Microsoft Rewards. Like I said, I was aware of it. It's not something I've been actively doing, but I know some people go and do their challenges every single day. It basically is just a cheap way to get you to perform Bing searches so they can claim that 1 million people use it or whatever. But it's worth looking into.
Hey, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, exactly. And then I actually have 3 app picks. I could have more. There's a few other things have happened since. But this week, Google released its first standalone podcast app. They actually have podcast functionality already in Google Play Music. This is an app that's based on the podcast functionality that's built into the Google Assistant and the Google Home. It looks okay. It's a little on the Spartan side. The one thing it doesn't have is auto downloading. So if you want to subscribe to podcasts and say, like, I always want the most recent 7 of this one, I always want the most recent 5 of that one, that actually is not there yet. So I wouldn't drop your current podcast solution yet, but it integrates nicely with their online services, obviously. And the notion here is you can be listening in the car, get home, pick it up again on your Google Home speaker while you're, cooking dinner or whatever, and it will save where you are and all that kind of stuff. So again, sort of like Microsoft Reward, something to look into. I don't think it's ready to, you know, compete with, say, Pocket Cast quite yet, but it, they might get it there. And then I've been writing a lot about cord cutting over the past year. I use various services like a lot of other people to do as well. I started looking at some of the secondary services that are out there, things like Crackle and so forth, where they offer free but ad-supported movies and TV shows. Crackle is kind of – could be called Crapple, frankly. But there's one called – I guess it's like Tubi, like T-U-B-I, that I'd never heard of. And it's actually pretty good. And the – it's free. It's ad supported. The ads are not gross. Like, they're not all over the place. They're not really, really long. They don't really seem to get in the way much. And the way I would describe this is, if you remember what Netflix was like before they had Netflix original series, there was always a small selection of really good movies, a reasonable selection of good movies, and then an unbelievable collection of schlock, like, you know, B movies, whatever. It's like that. So, but it's free. And I've actually already watched two movies via the service. And I guess like everything else I'm talking about today, it's worth looking at. You know, if you are trying to save money on TV services and would like to cut back on some of the other stuff, I wouldn't say it's an alternative to Netflix. It's an interesting thing to add to the collection of apps that you may use on your Apple TV or Roku or whatever to watch TV or your phone.
Nice.
And then third, and I don't have this yet, and it's really bugging me because I want to try this. I talked a few weeks ago about a couple solutions. One of them is called AirText, which I am using now and actually really like, which is a way to send and receive text messages from your Android phone on your Windows PC. But Google makes the Android Messages app on Android, and now they're making it available on the web like they did before with, I think it was Duo. Another messaging app they had, but the actual Android Messages app will support the same functionality over the web, meaning it will work on your Windows PC or your Mac or your Linux PC, whatever it is. For it to work, you have to get an update to the app, which I've not gotten. Supposedly it's going to happen this week. So I've been hoping to write about this and experience it and compare it to AirText. But if you're using an Android phone and if you're using the stock Android Messages app, this is something to look out for. And if you're sitting in front of a computer all day, the ability to send and receive texts over that PC instead of on the little phone for me is huge. I just type a lot better on the PC than I do on the phone. So again, something to look at, I guess.
Yeah.
these are more recommendations than they are really picks or whatever, but
I would use it, except as a Google Fi user, I like to use Hangouts because then I can have the same messages everywhere. And Android messages is tied to one number, which is a drag, you know.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
They should just fix Hangouts. Please just fix Hangouts, Google. Mm-hmm.
They should have one thing that does everything.
Yes, right, Hangouts sure. Did everything.
They can call it whatever they want.
It had a web interface. It had all of that stuff.
Yeah,
just don't get it.
They'll 2021. They'll get it.
All right, time for Mary Jo's code name pick of the week.
So I have two codename picks this week. The first one is Midori. And if you're thinking, I've heard of that. Yeah. Where was that? Yeah. A few years ago, Microsoft had a team inside the company that was building an operating system and stack that was not based on the Windows kernel. And the codename was Midori. They at one point had 100 or more engineers working on this. And then around 2015, they decided, you know what, we're not doing this. And they pulled the plug. So everybody kind of wondered, what happened to those 100 engineers? Because it was really like cream of the crop people at Microsoft who they picked to be on this kind of skunkworks team. Well, we found out this week what happened to a couple of them. Joe Duffy, who was very instrumental in Midori, and Eric Rutter, who used to be a really big cheese at Microsoft and was responsible for all of Midori before he left around 2015, co-founded a company called Pulumi. And they launched the company this week. They went public with the code and started talking about the mission of it. And what Pulumi is, it kind of has something to do with Midori, but not exactly. They're trying to make a cloud-agnostic, tool-agnostic platform that people can use to develop code. So if you look at what it supports AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, JavaScript, TypeScript, Python, Go, and they're just going to keep adding more and more things so that you won't be locked into any one cloud platform if you're a developer. So if you wonder what happened to Midori, this is what happened to some of the parts of Midori.
I still like that code name.
Me too. I love that code name.
And so they're still doing a non-Windows OS.
Yeah, it's more like a development platform now. And, you know, part of Midori was the development stack. It wasn't just the OS. It was all the associated tools. And they were trying to make them type safe. And they had a whole lot of goals, like building Midori, using the Midori tools. It was a really, really ambitious project that never came to pass.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
What is Pulumi?
I don't know. Do you guys know? Is that a thing? Is it a place? I don't really know what it is.
Pulumi. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Pulumi? It almost sounds like it might be a city in Washington State, but not quite.
Or like in Estonia.
Like Puyallup. Like Puyallup is a city. Yeah. Right.
Push me, Pulumi. Codename pick of the week number 2 is actually 3.
It is. So remember last week when we were talking about the codename Libra, which Brad and I had both heard might be the codename for these small, cheaper Surface tablets that Microsoft's building? I said at the time, I heard there's another code name, and I didn't want to put it out there because I didn't want to get anyone in trouble, that also began with the letter L.
Right.
Well, our friend the walking cat didn't care if anybody got in trouble. He threw it out there.
Oh. Well, it's public now.
Nice. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there, you know, I'm sure he's very also very safe about this. But the other code name is Lingo. So Lingo. there's Lingo and Libra. We don't know how those two things are related. If Lingo is Libra, like just a new version or a new code name for the same thing. If it's two different tablets in the same family, we don't know. And then he threw in two other code names because he's really good at this, that walking cat. Lexington and Gibson. And he's hinting around about these being connected to these tablets. And he also knew what the colors were. He started posting like, here's a list of the colors for these two things. And everybody's like, well, what are those things, Lexington and Gibson? And he's hinting that they could be peripherals for these tablets. So maybe it's the pen and the type cover. We're not exactly sure, but he's hearing like burgundy, cobalt, blue, platinum, black. So it sounds like they're building these low-end surfaces to be available in multiple colors like the Surface Laptop, with possibly coordinating pens and covers, if that's what those are. Now we have a whole bunch of code names. I'm not totally sure what any of them are, but we think they're all the low-end Surface tablet stuff that's coming.
So is the walking cat a journalist, do you think?
We don't know who the walking cat is. We've tried to get him on Windows Weekly before. Yeah.
Without Twitter, I mean, this person would have no pulpit.
I know. We don't know who he is.
Of course, he can't make any money off of Twitter. It's just just reputation.
I think he's awesome at cracking code names and finding hidden slides and videos. Yeah. He's just really good at this.
He could be a Microsoft employee, right? I mean,
I'm doubtful, but you never know.
You never know.
I know.
That's interesting. Yep. All right, I'm ready for some beer. I don't know about you. You ready for some beer?
I think so.
Let's get some beer in here.
Beer from Rhode Island today, Leo.
Yay! I like
Cranston,
the name.
Rhode Island.
Please be Narragansett.
No.
Not Narragansett.
No.
No, Cranston, Rhode Island has a brewery called Revival Brewing there.
Yep.
And
my mom lives
they make
Cranston,
a lot of
just
nice
down the road. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of nice beers. They make one called Night Swimmer.
Night Swimmer. Nice. Yep.
Night Swimmer has a nice picture of a woman swimming on the label. And this would be a beer for Brad Sams. It's a Belgian wit. And he loves that.
Yeah.
Kind of like Blue
Moon.
Also has
a girl on the front of it. Am I right?
Exactly.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Exactly. Wit is the same as a wheat, right?
Yeah, like a white. Wheat white.
Wheat white.
And, you know, some people are I really like it with an orange slice. Some people are like, nope. You know how people do that with Blue Moon? They also do it with this beer.
Yeah.
But whether you do or don't like an orange slice in it, it's a very nice, light, summery beer that is a Belgian wit. Night Swimmer.
Strongly recommend not using the orange slice.
I like it okay in beers. It's like, you got to be in the mood. And you also have to pronounce it that way because that's
Night
how people in Rhode Island.
It is literally
that's how we talk in Rhode Island. Rhode Island.
I mean, it's no wine slushy.
No.
It is not. No.
No.
It is not.
Brad says it's good. Night swimmer.
I like how he's the Simpson version of JFK.
I love Night Swimmer.
That couldn't have
that
gone better.
Is a fabulous beer. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch it live, you can. Twit.tv/live has, I think, all the channels in there. Ustream, YouTube, Twitch, and now Mixer. I think we might be losing Ustream. I think IBM is taking them all paid, so we might be losing one and gaining another. And I tell you what, Mixer looks great. You can watch us on your Xbox, on your big screen, in between Fortnite runs. If you do watch,
I should start streaming Call of Duty so I can be like the last guy who ever plays it.
Paul, it's premature to
say
it's over.
You're jumping to conclusions.
You're dead, Leo.
Team Fortress went for years, years. In fact, people still play it. It'll be like that. It'll be a nostalgia trip.
It's already like a nostalgia trip.
Well, I don't know anybody who's really as devoted to it as you are. You really take the cake. The cod cake, as we call it.
Nothing quite like a cod cake. That's a little birthday surprise.
If you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand versions of our show where there is audio and there is video, and that's all at twit.tv/WWWindowsWakeLate. If you want, you could subscribe in your favorite podcast app, including that new Google app. The nice thing about the Google app, it lets you put an icon for Windows Weekly right on your desktop, right on your phone.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Cool. So you just press it and you're there. You're
listening. You have to manage your downloads manually. It's kind of
strange. They'll fix that, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Hey, as a podcaster, I'm thrilled.
Anything, the more the better.
Anything is...
And they actually seem really serious about podcasts all of a sudden, too.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you for being here. Paul, Mary Jo, have a wonderful week. Stay cool. Stay dry. Stay frosty. I'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.